Hi, this is Chris McClune, and you are listening to Talking Trucks and Equipment here on March 1st, 2019. Tonight we are going to be talking about apparatus safety, and we're going to get into that in a bit. But you know, I wanted to just kind of go over just our March issue real quick. September. Geez, what am I talking about? February has been on the street for quite some time, so everybody should have already received that. We are on March 1st, so you should be expecting to see your March issue coming at any time now, once it hits the mail stream. Of course, you know, we also have our digital edition, which usually precedes the print edition by maybe a week or so. But just wanted to kind of quickly go through some things that you're going to be seeing this month. We've got quick attack trucks. That's our cover story this year. We're talking about mini pumpers. They're continuing to be mainstays in many departments. I know that for my department, we do have a company here, a fire company here, who did recently purchase a mini pumper. They use it for a lot of their, I guess, more some of the nuisance calls. We do have a divided highway that goes through their district, and there are often, you know, somebody discards a cigarette from the car, gets a little bit of the mulch going on the median or something like that. So they got it for that, so they can reduce the wear and tear on some of their larger vehicles. In fact, if I remember right, though, last year it did pull up on a fire that. It did pull up on a fire. It came in as a fire alarm. They got there. There was some light smoke showing. They got in. It was a working job, and they were able to use it as a regular pumper. Got themselves backed up and everything. So they do continue to see use. They do continue to see a variety of different uses, and they are continuing to be mainstays in some departments. I imagine that truck would also be used to get into some of our less accessible areas and some of our woods and things like that. So they're multifaceted and they're multi purpose. You know, they can be used for a lot of different things. Talked a little bit about front directional lights. Bill Adams takes a look at front directional lights. Now, that may seem like something that's not all, you know, that exciting, but it is where he gets into. He talks about their effectiveness and how the designs of the trucks can affect that, can affect their effectiveness. So Bill takes a look at some different designs of the front cabs, talks a little bit about what different manufacturers are doing, not by name, but he did talk to a number of manufacturers to see how they work their front directional lights. The concern being that, you know, because of the other lights that are there, are they as effective, you know, as they could be? Talked a little bit about this month about UTV and ATVs. They're, you know, continuing to be equipped for fire, rescue, and EMS duties. And you know, as these things become more sophisticated, they're being purchased even by big cities. One, just as a side note to that, I was just at the EMS Today show last week on February 21st, and there was a brand new small transport vehicle built on a UTV. It was a different name. It's not one that we hear very often, Tomcat, but but it is there. You could see it there. At that show, it was outfitted for EMS duties, but it will also be at FDIC next month, and it will be outfitted for more for fire suppression duties. So we've also got an article in March on a 1951 fire truck, an old Peter Pursh. So I don't want to waste too much time talking about just the March issue, but I did want to make sure I mentioned this Peter Pursh. It was a kind of a labor of love. The fellow who refurbed it, his father had some involvement with the truck when he was a career firefighter. So it was really, really a labor of love for him. So a lot of good stuff in the March issue as we lead up to April and FDIC. FDIC International, of course, is coming next month. We're going to continue to bring you that. And I would expect to see online at fireapparatus.com some news releases as we get closer to the show. People, a lot of the vendors, a lot of the manufacturers and fire service suppliers, they begin to release some of what they're going to be doing at the show. And you know, actually, it kind of ties in nicely with this month's topic. Oh, and I will be doing a podcast with editorial advisory board members Chris Daly and Ricky Riley while we're at the show. That's going to take place on Monday. Monday is the first show of the. It's the first podcast of the show, and I'm going to talk to Chris. I'm sure I'm going to get into some of these safety things, actually, that I'm talking right now, because Chris is big into operator training and operating safety. And that's what we're going to talk about a bit this month on the Talking Trucks and Equipment podcast here. We're going to talk about apparatus safety. Now, when I look at apparatus safety, it's not just a simple thing. It encompasses an awful lot of different categories that all come together for that safe apparatus response, or you know, as they all come together to make that fire apparatus safe for those who are on it. And I kind of look at it as operations, the built-in safety systems that are on the truck. I look at it as how fire apparatus contribute to firefighter health and safety. That's a big thing right now. And also safety in the parked blocking positions. There are all kinds of things that we're doing to make these apparatus safer than anything we've ever ridden in before. And I've said it many times, we drive in the most sophisticated and certainly the safest fire trucks that we have ever ridden in. However, we are still rolling them over. We're still crashing. We are being hit, and we are hitting other things. And there are things that everyone can kind of do to contribute to apparatus safety. So the operations, the features, the health and safety aspect, and the park and safety when they're parked are all different things that lead into overall apparatus safety. And you know, one of the biggest components of that, probably the most important component of that, is the operator. The operator is not only going to, it's not only about getting the truck to and from, it's about how that operator inspects the truck, the checks that he does at the beginning of the shift, the checks that she does at maybe the monthly checks. I know my particular fire company, although we're always keeping track of, you know, the trucks and, you know, noting things when we drive them on our reports, there is a monthly inspection where the engineering officers and the apparatus operators usually come out maybe on a Sunday morning to do the monthly preventive maintenance checks, and that goes through all kinds of things. But really, that operator and one of our former advisory board members, Chris Koop, used to always say that, you know, the apparatus operator, that chauffeur, the guy who the man or woman who's there to drive that truck every day, they really are the first line of defense in keeping that truck safe and making sure that all the mechanical features of that truck are up to snuff. And so, you know, really, but when you talk about the driver, the operator, the first thing you think of is how they drive. And staying in control is a major part of, you know, apparatus safety. That operator being able to maintain composure and kind of control the adrenaline rush you're getting. Any apparatus operator has been in the rig when, you know, it comes in as one type of call, but then it gets upgraded and you're en route, and you know, your feeling is to get going, you know, or, you know, it comes in as a house fire, just comes in as a, you know, odor of smoke inside. And then you know, you're not there yet. Maybe it's not, you know, I can think of one where it wasn't my district. We were responding in, we were second due engine, but the first new company got there first, they had smoke showing. And, you know, I was driving, and, you know, I mean, it's not always easy to kind of, especially when you're a younger operator, it's not always easy to control yourself and, you know, not punch it, you know, to get going there. I mean, you got to remember that you're driving a very large vehicle, and, you know, they're getting bigger. You know, it's kind of funny, just as a side note, we had a job the other night. I drove our air truck to it, so I got there a bit later, but it was a job. They got there. There was a heavy fire on the first floor, and once that fire was extinguished, they discovered that there was still a pretty decent fire going in the basement. So they, you know, so they went down. I got there later, and, you know, it was kind of amazing. The first due company to that has, you know, I think it's a 94 engine, it's a 97 engine. They have the 97 engine. They also have, I think it's an 82 Mack, but the 97 was out of service for some reason. So the Mack was the first truck due there. And it really was amazing when you look at today's rigs, you know, and how big they are. Even back then, it's a normal size fire truck, but, you know, the hose bed was all different. The, you know, like what we put into the back of the trucks on those rear steps and, you know, cabinetry and things like compartmentation, you know, really is amazing, you know, how big they've gotten over the years, you know, just between 82 and now. I mean, to me, that's not that long ago, but I'm sure there are some people who, you know, who weren't born then that consider that to be kind of ancient times. But the trucks are big, and when you're driving one, you do have to remember that you're not, you know, driving, you know, a pickup truck. You're not driving a small sedan, whatever kind of sedan you have. You're not driving a minivan. You know, you're driving a massive piece of machinery. And I'm thinking of it as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking of pumpers, you know. But I mean, when you think about ladder trucks and how big they are, a lot of the rescue trucks are very large vehicles. So, you know, the operator and how he drives the truck to the scene plays a huge role, and that's a big part of apparatus safety. The officer on the other side, I've said this before, the officer, you know, telling the driver to slow down. You know, I've had it both ways. You know, I've had, you know, Chris, slow it up a little bit, and, you know, there have been times where I was going a little too, being too cautious for the officer. He wanted me to step it up just a little bit, but, you know, officers, they need to keep their drivers under control. They need to regulate the drivers. And, you know, I've seen trucks, you know, leaving the firehouse and, you know, you're sometimes actually doing damage to the truck if you're reckless, you know, right out of the gate. You know, when you think about, you know, the ramp, it's not always a smooth transition from the ramp to the street. And, you know, if you don't have a long apron or a long ramp, and you just come shooting out right out of the gate and then you whip it to the left or whip it to the right, you know, all of that shifting and twisting is just not good for the truck. So really, I mean, like, it really does start right as you're leaving the firehouse. Properly trained operators. And this is where Chris Daly has been writing an awful lot. In fact, he's got a series right now. January, February have parts 1 and 2 of apparatus rollovers. April will have part 3. And Chris talks a lot about G-force. He talks a lot about center of gravity. And these are two things that don't always get covered in EVOC classes. But, you know, even if that is not specifically covered, you should have an operator who's been through an EVOC class, who's gone through the in-company training, but also something from an outside training, or maybe like the department level training, you know, properly trained driver to operate a vehicle that size. It's not always easy to get that training. I mean, and you, believe me, I know that there are places that, you know, like, they may not be able to bring in an EVOC class to take an engine out of service, to go to an academy to take the EVOC class might really put the department and the residents in a not good spot if you take the truck out of service for that amount of time. So, you know, but getting out there, getting on the roads, you know, learning your district, learning where the tight, you know, knowing where the tight places are. I'll be perfectly honest. There was one, I took our new rescue truck, up a driveway not too long ago, maybe, It might have been January, might have been the end of December. It was for an elevator rescue at a high rise. And I had taken a different truck up that driveway at one point. I had not taken the new rescue truck up that driveway, and I did bottom it out. And we had a strip of LED lights along the back, and quite frankly, I tore them off. Not easy to live those things down at the firehouse, obviously, but that was one where I did not realize that the that particular turn in that particular driveway was going to do that. And so when you're now it wasn't it also was not my district, and that was the first time I had driven that particular truck there. But you want to know what you want to know where these things are, where those types of situations are, and if you need to change how you're getting into the parking lot or something like that, you have to do so. And we did. We don't go in that way anymore. Only took doing that once before we didn't. The truck is back in shape now, and I believe the lights have been replaced, so I think we're in good shape. When you talk about that, knowing those things, is a big part of apparatus safety. The district. We're still seeing apparatus rollovers. It's hard to pinpoint where the problem is there. Is it driving too fast for the rig? Is it driving? Is it maybe not being totally familiar with the roads? Is it the road's fault? Where like there's a ditch you didn't that wasn't there yesterday but is there today? It's tough to say, but the fact of the matter is we are seeing still a lot of rollovers. Sometimes there are injuries, sometimes there are deaths, sometimes they get out lucky to not have gotten into trouble. But that is something that and that's where you get into that G force and center of gravity. The driver has to know when he starts to get uncomfortable, A, not to make a sudden change, but B, not to get the apparatus to a point where he's feeling uncomfortable. And of course, obeying traffic rules. It is not an easy thing to slow down sometimes and stop at a red light when you're going to a job. But if the light is red, stop. And I think that many of us have made the mistake of maybe going through a little too fast, maybe having a close call as a result. But there are so many things out there right now with opticoms and other traffic interception devices that you should be able to I would say anytime you're at a personally for me anytime you're at a at an intersection with traffic lights, you never know what's going to happen from the lanes that are crossing yours. So I mean, you always want to take it easy anyway, even if the light is green. That's just me, but I think that's a way to go. So that's kind of the operator side. I want to talk a little bit about the built-in safety systems on the rig that make apparatus safe. Via a lot of different things, whether it's just apparatus manufacturers innovating, whether it's via standards. There are a lot of things that are part of fire trucks today that weren't 20 and 30 years ago, and do mimic what we see in cars these days: airbag systems, anti-lock braking systems. One thing I don't see in a lot of cars, but certainly they are in the fire trucks now, is electronic stability control. And electronic stability control can be an eye-opener sometimes. I know that there was a curve in our district that with our first truck that had the electronic stability control on it, the first time I went through that curve, and I'd gone through a million times, and whatever the threshold was, I met it. And to feel that truck start, it almost felt like it was going to stall out. But that's an important feature, and one that probably has done a lot, to slow folks down. There are a lot of other control systems in place in fire apparatus to make them safe. I think of aerials in particular when I do that. Things, safety systems there that won't let the aerial do certain things. That are unsafe. those systems are there, but they're not there for us to, I guess, lose awareness of what we're doing and how we should be operating. Yes, there's electronic stability control, but it's not going to stop me from rolling over if I'm going way too fast into a curve or into a turn. It'll you know, if I'm that far gone, it will try to do what it can, but if I'm going, I'm going. So it's there, you know, to provide stability control, but it's not there to, you know, it can't do everything. So, you know, and that's where the operator comes back in. You know, the operator has to remember, you know, depending on how you spec the truck, there are 5 other people in that vehicle with you. Yeah, there could be 8 other people. There could be 9 other people, depending on the type of rig. And those people are depending on you to get them to where they got to go. Now, in a safe fashion. Now, there are other, you know, safety things in place that, you know, those 9 other people, or let's just take a four person crew with an officer and a driver. There are 5 other people there who should be doing what they're supposed to be doing as well. Seatbelt use. We've put in the buzzers. We've put in the notification. We've put in, you know, indicators on the dash that this person sitting in the rear facing driver's side seat does not have his seatbelt on. And we know all this, you know, but is that driver leaving the firehouse knowing that that person doesn't have their seatbelt on? If they are leaving the firehouse, without their seatbelt on, with knowing that someone doesn't have their seatbelt on, and they're just trusting that that person is going to put it on, you know, that's not always a given. I will say that the alarm that we have on one of our trucks sounds like an operating room, with the beeping, and so it does become pretty annoying. So hopefully, you know, that officer on the other side very quickly says, you know, you don't have your seatbelt on. But that officer should also, in my opinion, not be leaving the firehouse until he's sure or she is sure that everyone has their safety belt on. So, you know, there are all these built-in safety systems, but at the same time, I mean, like, you think about Jake brakes. I mean, that could be considered a safety system because, you know, it slows the truck down really well. But if you've got it turned off, what good is it? So all these things need to actually be used. Seatbelts need to be used in order to protect the firefighters. Equipment has to be stowed properly and you know, secured properly in the cab. You know, we are all about efficiency. We are all about trying to make sure that we get what we need off of the truck in a very quick period of time when we get on scene so that we can effect a rescue or effect fire extinguishment, all those things. However, you know, when you do get to that point, you know, not having them stowed properly in the event of an accident or the event of a very fast, rapid deceleration could really cause some problems in the back of the truck or in the front of the truck. So, you know, always make sure, you know, using these things is the key. I just did a podcast not too long ago when I was at EMS Today, and the person I talked to, you know, basically, you know, said, you know, like, you got to use the things that are there to protect you, or else, you know, or else it you know, they don't work. So again, you know, the firefighter common sense, operator common sense, so driving in a way that does not cause the electronic stability control to engage goes a long way toward not rolling over a truck. Firefighters wearing their seatbelts are going to fare better than those who do not, if God forbid there is an accident. Before I get into the next one, I guess I should talk a bit about this next one before I talk about the Twitter polls. We did a couple Twitter polls this week that, you know, the results were not entirely surprising to me, but, you know, it's a small capsule of people who are out there doing stuff, but There, I wanted to talk a little bit about health and safety apparatus that help contribute to firefighter health and safety. And yes, I am talking about that clean cab concept. It is something that has become a very prevalent thing to talk about, to discuss how we are building these trucks to help reduce exposure to a variety of contaminants that could lead to cancer. And the one thing is called the clean cab concept. Now, I've said before, and maybe on these podcasts, I've definitely said in different editorials that the idea is to do something. If you're serious about it, do something. No one is saying that you have to completely tear up the spec you were just working on in order to revise it and make it so that the new truck employs the clean cab concept. That's not what anyone is espousing. It's you know, there are a number of different things, a number of different pieces of the clean cab concept that can be employed either on existing rigs or new rigs. It could be something as simple as specking the new rig with a particular type of HVAC system that's been optimized to help keep contaminants out of that cab. I've walked into the firehouse and I know when we've had a job. You get into the truck, I know when we've had a job. The goal for a lot of people, for example, the chief of Miami-Dade, who we spoke to on this podcast not too long ago, he said his goal is to ensure that you don't know when they had a job by opening the cab door. Now, I as I said, I did some Twitter polls this week, and you know, this clean cab concept, whenever I post something about it via social media, via Facebook or Twitter, or not as much Instagram, but whenever I do post something about it, it elicits the just the clean cab concept moniker elicits a lot of different emotions. Some people absolutely consider it a non-issue, not a non-issue. Some people consider it not something that they want to do. Clearly, by their comments, they are not proponents of the clean cab concept. Other people consider it to be a very, very viable and a very, very important thing to pursue when you are designing your rigs. I asked via the Twitter poll, twitter.com/fireapparatus1, will the clean cab concept gain widespread acceptance in the fire service? And 58% of the respondents said no, 42% said yes. If I ask that tomorrow, I may get a whole other crop of people, and it may go from no to yes. But I think that it is worth throwing out there to talk about. This cancer prevention is something that has really taken center stage in the fire service at a variety of levels, whether it's at the apparatus stage, whether it's how you operate at the scene, whether it's back at the fire station. It is getting a lot of attention. Let's see here, where was I there? I'm kind of have my notes here. So there are a variety of things to consider when you're talking about apparatus design for health and safety, and it goes beyond the clean cab concept. How are you mounting equipment? Are you mounting equipment, heavy equipment up high, or are you mounting it down low? Hopefully you're mounting it down low so that you're not reaching up over your head to get the stuff out. That's an unsafe thing. We can talk about low hose beds and hose bed design. That's really going to come down to what works best for your operational efficiency. I believe that if you can keep firefighters on the ground instead of them having to get up onto the truck to get something, I think that's going to benefit them health and safety wise in the long run. A lot of our injuries on the fire ground are not, via collapse of a structure or or burns. They are mostly, many of our injuries on the fire ground are slips, trips, and falls. And some of those slips, trips, and falls are you know, off the apparatus. If you don't have handles in the right place, grab handles in the right places. If you have to get up onto the truck, and this is where, again, and I said a little while ago, firefighter common sense. This is where firefighter common sense comes in. If you're wandering around the top of the truck with wet boots, you could conceivably fall. And so you really do need to use the common sense there. You know, packing hose, yes, obviously you're gonna have to get back up onto the truck, especially if you're packing your LDH and stuff like that. But in the heat of the moment, having everything in an accessible spot where you don't have to climb up onto the truck to get it out is a good design. And that's what, you know, when we're talking about safe apparatus, that those are the types of things we are also talking about. And some of those things, some things have come across via standards, you know. You don't really see people anymore with 5-inch coming into the driver's side of the truck. Why is that? Because we did want people to be standing, the pump operator to be standing there and have a line blow off, potentially. We've also designed it so that hose restraints are used. In fact, you're going to see that in the April issue. We have a FAMA forum on the hose restraints. Safe apparatus, safe for the individuals riding and safe for the civilians standing on the street so that they don't get get hit with a nozzle or something else coming off the truck. So those are all the kinds of things. Again, you know, the helmet mounts inside the truck. NFPA doesn't want you to be wearing your helmet inside the truck. You know, when you get into wildland apparatus, when you see what they were able to do with the outside seating position, to maintain that safety factor, you know, all these things, the yellow lining around the top of fire trucks that's now part of the NFPA standard. You know, all these things are there to build a safer fire truck for firefighters, to ride and to use. So when you talk about the health and safety aspect of apparatus safety, those are just a few of the things that go into it that we need to think about. And, you know, when you're designing these things in from the very beginning, that's critically important. There was one other Twitter poll I ran, and I ran that today, and that was about, it was still sort of the clean cab design, but I brought it down a notch. I got into it a little bit more, and that was simply SCBA, in the cab or out. 79%, and this one's not done yet. There's still two more hours. 79% in said in the cab, 21% out of the cab. So obviously there's a disparity there. But again, it's your operations that will determine that. No one is saying that you must, that if you employ aspects of the clean cab concept, that you must get the SCBA, keep the SCBA out of the cab. You know, no one is saying that you shouldn't don the SCBA en route to the job. There is something though where, you know, are you putting it back on the truck with the SCBA off gassing, with the soft goods off gassing, or just, you know, the soot that might be on the cylinder getting onto other parts of the truck. It's those kinds of things. So, you know, do you bring in a utility vehicle like a pickup truck or something and take them and not put them back on the truck? I don't know what the solution is there, but no one is saying obviously that you have to keep them outside of the truck. And that is that gets people. I mean, that's almost like not quite to the degree of the smoothbore versus automatic fog, but it gets people going when you start talking about where they should keep the SCBA. There are some who feel that there isn't going to be because of the way we're trained to don these things so quickly, you're not going to lose a lot of time. That's what some people think, that you're not going to lose that much time putting it on once you get to the scene. There are others who feel that there are precious seconds being lost in doing that. So, you know, they want to keep it inside. And again, with this Twitter poll, you know, it easily could go the other way. It easily could, tomorrow, if I ran it again, it could go, I could get the people who feel that they should be on the outside of the cab, crew cab, chiming in more. So It's a little bit about the health and safety aspect of Apparatus Safe. Now, I wanted to talk a bit about safety in the parked or blocking position. In fact, not to belabor the Twitter poll thing, but I did also run another one this week, and it was, have we done all we can to fire apparatus to reduce crashes involving parked rigs at highway scenes? The answers were yes, no more we can do, no more can be done. And the third one, which probably, you know, looking at this now, probably slanted things a little bit. Civilians are the problem. 7% said yes, 38% said no, and 55% that civilians are the problem. And, you know, in many cases, and that's what we're trying, that's what we're learning. We're learning that there are distracted civilians, whether they don't hear trucks coming, whether they're just not paying enough attention to what's going on the road in front of them. Some of these crashes that we have are driving while intoxicated. So there's that aspect of it as well. You know, we need to adjust our operations often to how civilians are operating. And probably the one place where we encounter them the most is to and from a fire call on the road, and certainly at an incident that is taking place on a road. We've tried blocking one lane of traffic. We've tried using several units to block. There was a video where I think it was in Dallas, they used the tiller, the trailer portion of a tractor drawn aerial to block. And you know, because of the way a tiller works, you know, they were able to turn the rear wheels to start to do that blocking as they got closer. Certainly firefighters are trying to operate around these in a safe manner, and you know, sometimes we just we've lost one, our Courage and Valor Award winner, I shouldn't say it that way, but our Courage and Valor awardee was he's going to receive his family's going to receive the award. It's going to be awarded posthumously, but he saved a couple of his fellow firefighters when a vehicle came barreling into the scene and hit the rig that he was standing in front of. It ultimately also hit him and it cost him his life, but he had warned other firefighters nearby to get out of the way as that was happening. You know, he thought of them first before himself. He was a fire officer. Details of that are on fireapparatus.com as well. If you want more information about that individual and that act, but. We are. You don't necessarily have to be on the truck when it's hit to be injured, and don't just think that because it's a fire truck, it's not going to move if it gets hit. Especially, obviously, if a semi's coming, it's going to push it farther than maybe a pickup truck. But you know, we have seen reports where civilian vehicles, smaller vehicles, have nudged that truck forward a little bit. And now, you know, not only do you have the incident you were originally trying to work on, now often you've got somebody trapped in the vehicle that just ran into the back of the fire truck. I don't know what the answer is there. We've tried blocking fire apparatus, apparatus that has been not refurbished but repurposed as blocking vehicles. The idea is to also, though, make sure that they remain safe so that they're getting you to that scene and back in as safe a manner as possible. All the mechanical components of the vehicle are working, etc. So, you know, you have that aspect of things. Again, I'm not sure what the answer is there. And I know, you know, it's kind of getting on the tangential area of apparatus safety. But, you know, how we use them on the scene and how they're parked and how firefighters are operating near them. You know, does play a critical role. You see some apparatus manufacturers, or I'm sorry, not manufacturers, but purchasers are specking curbside pump panels to get the apparatus operator off of the road. You know, we've seen many. We've seen the top mount trucks, but we've also seen some where the pump panels are enclosed inside the cab. If there was a way to get from the driver's seat to that enclosed pump panel without having to get out of the truck. I would love to see it. I haven't seen it yet. I think that it can be done. I'm sure that it can be done. I can think of one instance where I'm pretty sure it could work. But obviously, it all comes down to your operational efficiency, your department's operational efficiency. So, those are some categories that I feel contribute to overall apparatus safety. You got your operator, built-in safety features, the health and safety, how that rig contributes and helps maintain the health and safety of the firefighters who are riding it, and of course, safety in the parked position. It's a little bit about apparatus safety. We do have FDIC coming up, so I'm sure that all the apparatus vendors there will be more than happy to talk to you about some of their newest safety innovations. That does take place April 8th to the 13th. It's a little earlier this year, so keep that in mind. It's not at the end of the month. It's really close to the beginning. It's before Easter, actually. So obviously, you've heard us talk about it before. This is the largest trade show, the largest conference and exhibition in North America. Obviously, my focus while I'm there is what's going on the exhibit floor, but you also get a chance to see a lot of apparatus and equipment in use when you come on board for the hands-on training evolutions, forcible entry, truck company operations, obviously engine company operations. You get a chance to use an awful lot of stuff, a lot of SCBA. You get a chance to use new thermal imaging cameras. Sometimes you might not know it, but you're demoing a new product that, it's kind of on the proving ground at FDIC. Obviously, we have an extensive vehicle extrication class. So, when you get a chance to use a lot of a variety of rescue tools from different manufacturers. So keep that in mind as well. So FDIC is coming up. It's in Indianapolis. If you can get out there, do everything you can to. It's the largest exhibition in North America. Anything you could be looking for is going to be on that show floor. And I have always found that the representatives from all the different vendors are very eager to talk about the newest and greatest things that they've been working on. They're very proud of the work that they've done, and especially when you get into the firefighter-owned or companies and firefighter-designed products, there's a tremendous amount of pride there that they take in the fact that now they're at FDIC, they're at the big time, and they're seeing people who are truly, truly interested. You're not going to make that trip to Indy just to tire kick. If you're going to Indy, you're going there to train and to learn about what is out there to help make your job more efficient but also safer. So I will hope to see you in Indianapolis next year. If you do happen to see me wandering, I wouldn't say I'm necessarily wandering, although I may by the end of the week look like I am in a bit of a daze. But if you do see me, stop me, say hello. Let me know what we're doing right here. Let me know what we're doing wrong. It's no problem to let me know both things. So again, this has been Chris McClune. You've been listening to Fire Apparatus and Emergency Equipment's Talking Trucks and Equipment podcast. I will see you again next month, or I'll talk to you again next month. Everybody take care and have a good one.